Song is called Big Enough. Music from Chris Rice. Before that, The Beauty of the Cross from Crystal Lewis. Also heard from Phil Driscoll and I Will Dance. Good morning to you. 13 minutes after the hour, it's a Monday. And together we find ourselves on Broken Road Radio. And joining us now from Garden Valley, Texas, is Dr. Don Clark, biochemist and vice chairman of the board with Creation Moments. Don, good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Jim. Good morning, Dave.
Awfully
morning,
spiffy. Don. I like your shirt there. It says palm branches on the shirt there. Looks like
yeah, a little
tropical
bit.
Design it's, of some kind. Yeah,
yeah, it's one of my Hawaiian style shirts.
Well, now wait a minute. Now there are no loud colors in that shirt. That's a very conservative Hawaiian shirt. If indeed that's a Hawaiian shirt,
it is very conservative. Yes, okay. It's just black and basically white and gray.
Okay,
so it's subdued,
just like a scientist would choose, probably right off the rack. Yeah, something a little quiet. And no, we're glad to have you. We missed you last week. You know, I was off having some eye surgery last week, so we didn't do the morning program. But things are back and in working order. I can see you just fine. Thank you for your prayers on that. That just worked out beautifully. God did what I figured He would do all along and brought it all through. So,
we're very good.
Biochemically or genetically engineered corn and soybeans. There's an article on Mercola.com about this, and let me just read the first paragraph. It says, scientists in Norway have released results from experimental feeding studies carried out over a 10-year period, a full decade, and the verdict is in. If you want to avoid obesity, then avoid eating genetically engineered corn, corn-based products, and animals that are fed a diet of genetically engineered grain. They just abbreviate it with a GE. How do you do that? That's a huge thing. Corn is all over in various forms, isn't it?
It's in everything, that's a good question, because when I read that, I said, okay, this sounds impossible. I mean, the only way to completely eliminate it is to go completely organic, because, of course, you know, cows are fed genetically engineered corn, mm-hmm. and so your beef is derived from those cows. So you can't have your normal cows; you've got to have organically grown cows. You know, chickens, they have cornmeal, you know, in it, as well as a lot of other grains. Mm-hmm. You know, your chips, of course, all your corn-based chips. I mean, it's a big problem.
Yeah, and corn syrup in so many other products.
Yeah, high fructose corn syrup, which is almost in everything.
we're awash in corn here. You could drinking a Coca-Cola could expose you to genetically engineered products here. Is this a surprise to people, and is it generally known? I mean, we're looking at a website by Dr. Mercola. I don't know the doctor. But if this is a 10-year study out of Norway, it's got to attract some attention in mainstream media and maybe some other scientific journals. But this is very recent, a recent release of the study, isn't it?
Well, this particular study was published in July of this year, so it's a recent publication of the results. But these type of effects have actually been known for years. In U.S., there have been U.S. studies that have pretty much shown the same thing, and this one kind of solidified it because of the duration of the study. It's one of the longer studies that I think have been done on the subject. So it's in that regard, it's probably more definitive in saying, yeah, there's definitely an effect here that we want to be cautious about. I also want to mention that the study was not a 10-year study in humans, and so you could say, oh, well, this only happens in animals, but this study was performed in rats, mice, pigs, and salmon, mm-hmm. and so there's a variety of animals that was used, but it was broad-based. The obesity happened in every single animal that was tested. So the conclusion is that, it's going to happen in humans as well. And the animals had major organs that were affected, like the liver, kidneys, pancreas, the genitals, and more, the study found. So It's a study that we definitely want to take note of, and you don't want to necessarily presume that the same thing is going on in humans, other than we have been, as a society, in, at least in the United States, we have been getting fatter and fatter.
Well, and yeah, so, I think that's apparent. How long has genetically engineered corn been around?
Do you know? This particular corn, it's called BT corn, and the BT basically stands for a soil bacteria, Bacillus thuringiensis, and not that they incorporated the whole bacteria in the corn, but that particular bacteria generates a toxin which is toxic to certain types of insects, and it basically causes their stomachs to be opened up. Like puts little pores in their stomachs, and so, you know, they wind up dying. And so it's the toxin, the gene for the toxin that was incorporated into the gene for the corn. And so the corn now carries this toxin, and the idea is that, gee, if this corn can, you know, generate this toxin, then these insects won't affect the corn.
So the corn carries and produces its own pesticide, as yes. do the soybeans, I guess, the same kind of genetic modification there in soybeans.
Yes, the BT soybeans have the exact same thing. So what? Between the corn and the soybeans, you know, we got major problems.
Well, how long ago did BT corn appear? Is it a decade? Has it been around, or must have been?
About the mid 1990s. Okay. So I think it first came on the market in 1996, mm-hmm. Or thereabouts, mm-hmm. and so.
What kind of studies are done on genetic engineering to protect human beings from possible side effects then? I mean, at the time this came out, did the FDA, for example, have any say in the matter? Or was this all a matter of corporate farms and chemical companies getting together and deciding to produce genetically engineered corn?
Well, the FDA is involved in reviewing the products, but the studies that were done were very short term. They weren't like, you know, they weren't like these 10-year studies, and so whatever data was presented to the FDA showed that, oh, there's no problem with the product. Now, there may not be a problem with the product on a short-term basis, but there certainly is a product on a long-term basis. So I think it's time, you know, that the FDA should go back and review this. But that's going to take some type of consumer protection group to say, you know, hey, there's a problem with these type of products. At the very least, all products that are genetically engineered should be labeled as such.
But the trick is, as it's just a common consumer out here, how do you avoid them? I mean, organic produce is available, I guess, in most markets, but in small quantities at high prices. And if we all turn to organic products, I'm not sure that they could ramp up production enough to feed us all. I mean, that's like a different world.
Yeah, no, it is. And there's so many, right now, there's so many regulations even on organic products that even the organic farmers are having a hard time, keeping up with the regulations. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think one of the answers for society was the small farmer who had, he basically saved back his seed from the previous year to plant again in a new year. And they weren't
subsistence farming we're talking about, the way it was done on the frontier before farming for agricultural as a business. Before that really got a foothold, people farmed for themselves, their families, and their neighbors, their community.
Right. And you went to, you know, you went to your local village or city market, and you had fresh produce and fresh, you know, fresh products. And it was, it was all, you know, natural stuff. You didn't have these, like today, we've got these mega farms mm-hmm. where we've got millions of acres being, you know, cultivated and tended by one corporation. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, basically. It's scary. Now, I remember rumors, this probably was 20 years ago, I heard talk of this, though, that the seed companies were attempting to produce seed that would not reproduce fruits and vegetables that carried their own seeds, so that you would have to go back to the original source to buy more seed. Have you ever heard of that at all?
That's been happening for years.
Oh, it has. You could grow tomatoes that won't have seeds, for example.
Right. Well, exactly. Oh. And those are hybrids, especially mm-hmm. specific hybrid type of seeds. Now, a natural hybrid where agriculturalists basically have selected out for certain characteristics and produced like a big boy tomato or something. Mm-hmm. And the only way to get a big boy tomato is not to plant the seeds from the big boy tomato, is to go back to, you know, the hybrid process. Mm-hmm. So some of these hybrids will regress back to their native type of plant after the first generation.
But still there are seeds that you can plant that are derived from the first crop.
Yes, that's right. But, and those non-hybrid, non-genetically engineered seeds or plants are the ones that farmers used to plant because that's all they had.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can remember, you know, growing up, my family on my dad's side was from Illinois, and some of his relatives were farmers, and they would harvest their corn, and then they would store some of the corn seed for the following year, and that would work because they weren't hybridized, they weren't genetically engineered, and they wouldn't have to go back, you know, to the ag center to buy new seeds every year.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't, for the ag center, there wasn't a lot of money in that. So
yeah, I see. Well, it boils down to money, doesn't it? It's economics that's putting us in this situation. I mean, what could be more economic than a corn crop that fights off its own insects?
You don't have to use pesticides. And yeah. So that's the selling point. And it, you know, it sounds good.
And yet it seems logical if you have corn that produces its own pesticide, it's still a pesticide and would be of concern to people. Now, in this article, a little farther down, it's talking about earlier findings have already shown that this BT corn is in the human system. It's been found in 93% of the pregnant women tested, 80% of umbilical blood in their babies, and 67% of non-pregnant women. So it sounds like it's pretty well permeated society. And I guess the question is, what are the ill effects, if any, in humans?
Obviously, if you carry this the current study that we're talking about forward, then one of the major effects is going to be obesity. But there have been, Roundup Ready products, and corn is one of those as well. I think we've talked on a previous program about Roundup Ready products, and mm-hmm. in that kind of causes genetic mutations in women that are pregnant in their fetus.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got obesity and potential genetic mutations and going on. It certainly is a reason to be very, very concerned about these particular products.
Well, perhaps with all the attention that the media is focusing now on child obesity in particular, something like I forget the percentage, is now a third, 50%, 60% of kids are considered obese, whatever that means, whatever that standard is, and adults following suit. Maybe with all that attention directed toward obesity, that the causes of obesity will also be examined, and studies like this will come to the forefront, do you suppose? Is that wishful thinking?
Well, I would hope so. And I think a lot of people have, or a lot of, you know, scientists are kind of studying the problem. And I don't know. It's a difficult problem because I am sure the BT toxin is either in very low concentrations, although they can measure it because they've measured it in in women in that study you referred to, but it would be interesting. It's kind of hard to do kind of the same type of study in humans unless it's post-mortem. Wait until the people die. And then, but there have been studies like that done where you look at the organs after a person has died and say, okay, what are the effects on the liver and the kidneys and, the heart and, the brain? Because I think while I was reading this particular article, one of the items that was mentioned is that this particular product can cross the blood-brain barrier, which, okay, mm-hmm. So what is it doing in the brain? Is it going to, cause a whole bunch of other, effects?
Even autism, for example, which is either increasing because our definition of it is changing or because there are actually more autistic children being born. I'm not sure how that's working out, but that's one possible outcome of the effect on the brain.
Right. I mean, in autism, ADD, I mean, there's a whole slew of neurological type of, brain disorders that could possibly be linked to this ultimately. I guess even if the science is not completely conclusive at this time, there is enough evidence out there, like I said earlier, to warrant in this country labeling of these products.
Mm-hmm. But then what do you do about it? So everything around you is labeled genetically engineered according to law, but there's nothing else to buy. This has got to spur the organic vegetable and fruit industry in some fashion, I would think, to respond and offer us an alternative.
Oh, yeah, they would. They would. I mean, there's, that's the whole thing. I mean, you would see a whole new industry, which is really, I mean, it's already there. It just needs to, there needs to be a shift.
But it means going backwards. It means going in reverse, back to the way things were closer to the beginning, without the additives, without the, and I've got to tell you, I don't know if I mentioned this to you or not, but a customer came into my wife's store the other day. And they were just chatting, and she said that the food is driving her nuts here. That she came from, and my wife could not recall the country, but she came from a country where additives to food were illegal, period.
Uh-huh, right.
And I don't know if that carries over to genetically engineered food or not, but she said everything here has got stuff in it that disrupts her systems and just makes her feel lousy. And it's something that we're used to. We just do it every day. But I guess what I'm asking is this genetically engineered corn and soy, is that basically a U.S. problem or is this worldwide? I've got to believe it's worldwide now.
Well, it's less of a problem in Europe in that they have the regulations in place. They've always had the regulations in place. Germany does not allow genetically engineered food at all. So the Germans are protected. And, England and France or some others that look very, very skeptical at genetically engineered products. But here's the problem. I mean, you've got the highly developed nations like Germany and the UK and us. We're lagging behind protection. The FDA is supposed to protect us, but in this case, you wonder really if they've been sold a bill of goods and other things associated with it. But the big problem now is in second world countries, for example, Brazil, and South America, Mexico, and stuff. These mega corporations that are providing these products are pretty much taking over the agricultural system in those countries. So now we've got you know, we've got this technology going into these, you know, like I said, second world countries, you know, third world countries, providing a food source, and the people don't want it, but the government is not sophisticated enough to block the entry.
Well, this even speaks to a more basic danger, and that is scientific or genetic meddling to begin with. If we're dealing with a system that God created and deciding that somehow we know how to make it better. I mean, I think there's a certain latitude that God gives us for making improvements and discovering things and learning how his system works and adapting it to our needs. But science can make changes that are so subtle that they're not even apparent for generations, that who knows what we've done to folks two or three generations down the line. I think back to, and this is confirm or deny this, I mean, if you have some history of this, but I'm told that back in the 30s, it was all the rage to think that we were iron deficient, that we had weak blood. And the answer was to fortify all kinds of food with iron, whether it was milk or cereals or all the mass-produced foods. And then by the 1950s and 60s, we discovered that an excess or an overload of iron was a primary cause of prostate cancer in men. So it took about 30 years to see the results of that supposed scientific, verifiable, healthy development in food processing. And how many other such processes are going on right now that are not controlled, not fully understood, and may not become apparent two or three, four generations down the line? It's kind of scary.
Yeah, and these type of, you know, the modifications are getting much more sophisticated. I mean, adding iron, you know, iron
it's pretty,
oxide
pretty simple,
is easy
but
to
they,
add.
But they didn't understand the outcome fully is the point. You know, regardless
right.
of the technology.
And they assumed that, oh, you know, it looks like, you know, some folks that we're testing are iron deficient. Well, are they really iron deficient, or that's their basal level, that's their baseline level mm-hmm. of iron? Mm-hmm. And so when you're pumping, you know, people full of iron, you think, well, that's a good thing. And yeah, there was a product on the market, which obviously you remember the TV commercials back in the early days.
Built strong bodies 8 ways. It was Wonder Bread. Yeah. Iron supplements and Cheerios.
Yeah, iron poor blood.
Yeah.
And
Geritol.
You know, especially women. Mm-hmm. They needed to take this product. Mm-hmm.
Well, here's another aspect of that problem. You just mentioned it, that they assumed there was a baseline that applied to all people, when in fact an individual level might be just perfectly normal for that person. I've spoken to doctors now that say a blood pressure of 200 is not a problem. That could be a perfectly acceptable blood pressure for you. Yet the industry says no, it's got to be, you know, 120 over 80, or there's problems here, and we need to treat it.
Right.
So, are we getting smarter or not?
Oh, I don't think we're getting smarter. I think we're
back to Dr. Don's theory. I knew it. The Don Clark theory of devolution. I'm a subscriber. Right. You know, I think he's right.
The problem is not that we're getting smarter or dumber, or that our knowledge base is increasing. I think our knowledge base is increasing. The problem is that God created such complex beings that in everything is interconnected and interlinked. I mean, just a normal little cell in your body, Darwin's day, they thought, oh, this is just, you know, it's
simple
just protoplasm.
Stuff.
Yeah. It's just protoplasm. It's just, there's kind of, you know, it's gooey stuff, but there's not much in it. We find out today that it's not just, you know, a thick soup of something. It is a matrix that is highly organized, and there is so much little machines in the cell. So if you've got all of this complexity going on at the cellular level, and then you've got intercellular communication going on, and then inter-organ communication going on, and then throughout the body, it's not surprising that perturbations that we make in our food source, and in our you know, system, that we're having side effects. This is not, you know, surprising.
Well, I'm certainly hopeful that, this study goes goes public, and that the general, you know, the mass media as a whole gets a hold of this and does something with this. At least spreads the information around, because it looks like there's a whole lot of work yet to be done to correct this imbalance. And I guess maybe I'm easily sold. I look at this and I listen to you and I think, yeah, this is valid. I believe this, and it's a serious problem. David, what's your impression of the article and the findings?
I feel like I'm doing the one note samba. I've seen every time I see or hear one of these studies and then hear about the complicity or the ineffectiveness of the FDA, these same kinds of claims have been made about Monsanto and their soybeans for years. And it doesn't, it just seems like those studies are either poo-pooed or swept under the rug, or it doesn't seem like anybody is willing or to stand up to, in this particular case, big government, to stop protecting companies, individual companies, to continue to do this stuff. I mean, we're willing to weigh in on tobacco to a certain extent. We're not willing to stop it.
Yeah, we're not willing to stop it. That's a good point.
We're willing to tax.
Well, money talks, doesn't it? This feels like a conspiracy to at least some level.
Yes.
That prevents effective and opposing action. Yeah.
And it sounds like the same story over and over again. And then this is not the first time that we've heard the story about the suggestion that that GE products are badly affecting the human being. If you look at a grocery store, the average grocery store, and ask the guy who's running the place how much of the product in here is made from corn or includes some form of corn, it's about 98% or 90%. Mm-hmm. It's all the middle parts. I mean, there's the vegetables along the outside, but everything in the middle has got some sort of corn in it. Now, how can that be good? How can that be positive for a complex human being like we are? But nobody seems to want to say, well, let's stop doing that. Let's try to do some tests. Let's try to examine what else we can do. It seems like the people who do read studies like this and figure this out, their only choice is to go back to the farm, mm-hmm. and start to raise their own crops. And I mean, it's.
And I think people are doing that. I think there is a move. There is a movement because Mercola's website is not a widely read. He's got a widely read, you know, blog and entries, because he picks up on things like this all the time. But it's not known by everybody, and he's just one person out there, and that is trying to, you know, raise a red flag, but do it in a in a more, not necessarily scientific way, but in a more medical, you know, way, because he's a MD. By the way,
if any of the listeners want to check the article, it's on Mercola.com. That's Mercola. It's a Dr. Mercola, Mercola.com, and you can check out some of his other articles and findings as well. But this might be something you want to do.
Yeah,
he gives the source references too for his whatever he posts on his site. So he does a fairly good job of cross referencing.
Is anybody doing a study in humans, living humans?
There have been a long term study like was done in the animals.
Right.
I don't know if anybody is actually doing that. I don't know. One would think that, you know, this type of study needs to be kind of followed up with studies in humans. It's a little more difficult to do it in humans for a number of reasons, and one is you can't control the diet of a person.
Right.
I mean, you can have the person, you know, keep a log, but how many people are going to do that over a 10-year period? It's going to be very difficult. difficult to get find someone with that type of discipline.
I know how.
How's that?
You do the study with prisoners.
Ah,
yeah, there you go.
We have the highest percentage of.
Think Hitler tried that, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I keep hearing constantly that we've got the highest percentage of prisoners in of any civilized nation behind bars. Well, let's take advantage of it. We can control their food.
Yeah, that's inhumane. You know that would. studies on the prisoners bring you back to, you know, Hitler time.
The Third Reich. we'd have to make some modifications. David, are you serious? You're kidding. Sometimes he kids about this stuff, you know.
You got to break eggs to make omelets. You know what I mean?
David, let's look at the bright side.
I'm only half kidding. Because here's where I'm going with this. What we're doing is we're killing ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
We're creating monsters. I have no doubt in my mind that the rise of ADD and ADHD and all these mental reactions in kids particularly is either due to Ritalin or due to something else. I mean, I don't think there's something in the water. I don't think that suddenly American women developed the transmittable gene for all these weird mental diseases. I mean, it came from somewhere. And, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist, sorry, Don, but it doesn't take a rocket scientist to go in a grocery store and look at all those products that 90% come from one particular source and then say, I wonder if maybe there's a link. But at least it would suggest, let's at least do a study.
Yeah. No. Exactly.
Yeah. Let's look into it.
But we
kind of blandly say, well, you know, we can't do the study because we can't do the study to save ourselves because we don't want to treat some guy that's doing 25 to life because he raped a kid. We don't want to treat him badly. Hmm. Well, that's nuts.
Well,
make it a part of
David,
the law.
David, we need to look at the bright side. By the time this national debt needs to be dealt with and Social Security fails and all those retirement benefits are supposed to come in and there's no money for it, we'll all be dead.
Yeah.
So it won't be a problem.
Here's another idea. You know, tie it to benefits. If you take Medicare or Medicaid or welfare food stamps, you have to also submit to a genetic testing.
This would be pretty controversial, David. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I say, you got to break the eggs.
Well, the real question remains is how do you get momentum started in the other direction? And it's got to be with information. And it's got to be like we're doing. We're talking about it on internet radio today. And hopefully some people are going to hear it, and they might read it too. And some of them might be connected with this industry or that government agency and say, but hey, we got to look into this, you know. So that's how
and I think one of the ways of doing this is consumer protection groups. Basically, I mean, you know, we all know Ralph Nader and what he started with the Corvair. I mean, that forced a major automotive company to redesign a product. And, you know, so it's not impossible. It just takes a lot of people, banding together with a cause and signing petitions and, petitioning their congressmen and senators to pass the laws that are necessary, you know, to protect us. And it's not going to happen through industry. It's got to be consumer protection groups.
Yeah, got to be aware of the effect of all these dollars. Don, it's been a delight as always talking to you, and thank you for heading down to the local coffee shop and their internet connection there in Garden Valley, Texas. You got to thank the owners for us. We appreciate
believe me, we definitely do.
Okay. And it's either the quantity of the internet connection that Don likes or it's the blueberry scones. I'm not sure which it is, but whatever it is, we're just glad to have you with us each and every Monday. So thanks again for being here, and we'll talk to you in a week or so, okay?
All right, sounds good. It was great being with you folks again.
Dr. Don Clark, biochemist and vice chairman over at creationmoments.com. By the way, you can link to creationmoments.com from our website at brokenroadradio.com. I suggest you do that. It's a great resource, Creation Moments. Music from Linda McKechnie at the piano.